This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Thank you very much for those voice notes. Sending them on 0833037093. Of course, your calls 0861987000. Thank you once again to Musi Maimane, the leader of the One South Africa movement, for making some time for us this evening. It's 12 after 11 o'clock. Well, we'll continue talking about elections, but talking broadly now about those changes, in fact, to the Electoral Act, the debate that has prompted. And it's important for us to watch those very closely because, of course, we are focusing on what is coming up next year. But midway, there is that expectation, in fact, that requirement from the highest court in the land that, in fact, there are indeed some changes. What would those changes look like given where we are currently? What might the journey look like going forward? Of course, then what it does, it gives people like Musi Maimane an opportunity to then run as independent in 2024. However, though, those the debates that are happening in places such as the ANC's NEC, the National Executive Committee as well, suggest that it won't be that simple. So we want to just understand what is at play here, given that at least the court side of things having come to an end. Now it's about, of course, what these changes will look like. And to help us understand this a bit more, Lulu White is my guest, who's a thought leader on elections, democracy and governance. I'm also joined by the electoral systems researcher at My Vote Counts, Letlhogonolo Letsele, who's also joining us on the line. Lulu, let's start with you. Good evening and welcome to Power Perspective.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
It's a fascinating time overall, Lulu, just speaking about the local government elections. We spent quite a bit of time talking about the issue around registrations and lists and so on. And that matter, of course, as we know, hasn't been put to bed. But from our previous conversation with the One South Africa movement, for example, there's quite a bit of work being done in terms of independent candidates. Not new in these kinds of elections as well. But does it not come at a time where, as we lead up to the changes that we are likely to see in the Electoral Act, that it really just it sets up what will be essentially very unprecedented times in the country?
It definitely does. But I'm one of those people that actually hold the view that electoral reform is long overdue in South Africa. Mm. I think if we look at the history of where our elections come from and how we got into agreements with the current electoral system, it was meant to be a system for transition from an apartheid state into a democratic state. So it wasn't supposed to have lasted as long as it has. I mean, that's the reason why it is a mixed system. And that is why you see, even at local level, there's a difference between the electoral system that is being applied at local level and at national and provincial level. So it was meant to be a process of just a transition of that particular time and then revisited. So it's interesting. Obviously, we're looking forward to 2024 to see how it will actually roll out for all of us. But, I mean, we can see that it's a system that's already in existence. The mixed electoral system is working within the local government sector. Are people taking advantage of it as much as they should? Perhaps not. What improvements do we need to look at to make sure that people are able to maximize on it? Perhaps that's a discussion that we should be having, because if we have it at local government election and it is not being exploited as much as it should, what difference would it make for us at national and provincial level? That's what we need to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the reasons that people aren't taking advantage at local government election? What perhaps are some of the prohibitive conditions, if you will, or is it just a lack of information or education about these?
I think it's partly a lack of information and education, But the bigger question that you when you interact with people at local level would be, how will I hold this person accountable? I elect an independent to be a ward councillor. When he gets into council, he's competing for space, and his voice is competing for space with other political party member, with other councillors who are members of a political party, and he's then, and his voice is then subjected to a vote, and he comes out as a minority, and as such, my interest as the person that voted for him at local level are therefore not carried through. So you find that more people then believe that it is better to back up a political party, because they feel that if the political party is in the majority, then it makes sense, it's easier for them to actually have a louder voice in council where decisions actually have to be taken.
Let me bring in Lehlohonolo Letsele as well, who is with My Vote Counts. Thank you for your time this evening, Lehlohonolo.
Hi, Zebe. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's perhaps just pick up on that last point that Lulu was speaking to about a lack of information and how in general people are engaging with the idea that their vote is powerful, and that you in fact have such a critical role to play in where your area, where you find yourself, actually goes, where it then ends up. So for people who then say, but what is the point of me voting? The reasons perhaps when you're thinking about a general election, that, you know, when you perhaps speaking even at an ideological level, you can almost understand that sort of talk. But here, where it's immediate, where you know exactly what your needs are, whether you need a library in the area or potholes to be fixed, whatever it might be, it's so close to people, yet sometimes it seems so far, because there sometimes isn't that, or you don't get the sense that there's a recognition of understanding the power of you getting in the queue and making a choice on the day.
I think you're raising a very important question with regards to, you know, how people hold local government accountable. Those are the issues. I mean, it's different, the system that's used at national and provincial and the ones that are used at local government. So people do not necessarily have the proper education to understand, you know, how is it that we hold people accountable? How does council work? How often do I meet with my councillor? You know, how much decision-making can I participate in terms of council and decisions? So I think it boils down to, you know, the type of education at the local government level. You know, I mean, it's the closest form of government that's to the people. I mean, it doesn't service delivery, sanitation, but you would be shocked, you know, to discover that people do not necessarily have that connection, you know, between their local representative, for instance, their ward councillor, and what happens in council. So probably maybe what you're seeing now with the likes of Action SA putting forward, you know, independent candidates, and Muslim Women is one SA movement also, you know, projecting and, you know, highlighting independent candidates. Maybe it's just trying to show people that, you know what, there's a difference. You can either, I mean, there's a difference in the electoral system from national and local government. So with local government, you can either choose an independent candidate. I mean, even community organizations, you know, social movements can also put up an independent candidate if they choose not to be a political party. So there's quite a diversity when it comes to local government in terms of, you know, choosing a representative. So I think it's just putting it out there and teaching people about holding the local government to account.
So much of the process, at least of electoral reform, but also what then happens to, of course, meet the requirements as set out by the Constitutional Court, feels as though it is now out of our hands as people. Is that a correct framing? I mean, at the point at which you have the influence, of course, of big political parties, a majority of political parties in parliament, for example, such as the ANC, taking a particular stance, that informs how they'll move forward, particularly when it comes to this reform. Are we essentially powerless at this point, given where the process is?
But I mean, that's what we have been fighting for, to open up the electoral reform process. I mean, it's going to change people's lives. So I think it's only in the interest of transparency that people are part of it. I mean, you would recall earlier this year, we had the establishment of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on the Electoral System. Right. That's when the Minister of Home Affairs took some suggestions from people in terms of what they think in terms of policy going forward. So a number of civil society organizations, you know, movements put in their thoughts in terms of what they think the electoral system should look like. So that was essentially our chance as society to contribute to electoral reform. But I mean, it was not made as open as possible. I mean, it was just those close intimate sessions where you would be invited to make a submission. You know, it was either oral or written. So, but now the report sits with the minister, so it's up to him that he makes it public or not. I'm not too sure in terms of if he's legislated to make that report public. And the following step is taking the report to Parliament, you know, to let them know, well, this is what the committee has recommended and these are the options, and then they'll debate it from there. But as far as I know, from that debate, it needs to be opened up, and that's when, again, as the public will be given a chance to kind of make contribution into it. So I think the onus is upon us as civil society to make it open so that people, when the chance comes in, then we're able to make some points for consideration in South Africa's electoral system.
Lulu, on the same question there about how much of a say or how much involvement the electorate still has in the stage of the process.
They actually have quite a big involvement, in my view, because as she's just said, from whatever it is, the ministerial interventions that have happened, there also has to be a process of public participation. So this bill, actually, they have to create a bill, whether it's the New Nations Movement that actually took the story, the case to court. I know that Musi Maimane's team actually presented a bill. I know that there's a Van Slabbert committee that actually presented something to Parliament with regard to the same. So there's actually various, even private members, private citizens can actually write a bill and present it to Parliament for discussion. So, and then there would be then the process of that being a debate in Parliament, and then there would be a public participation process that would be opened. So the public can actually drive this. As a matter of fact, it should be driven by the public, because one organization took it to court and won the case that basically said not allowing people to contest at national and provincial level is unconstitutional. Now, it's then the public that should then have that same push, that same passion that would then say, okay, let us draft something that we can present to Parliament and say this is one of the alternatives that we are considering as a public. And then that process then becomes open to public participation. So the challenge in South Africa, though, is that we do not have an active society. We don't have active citizenry, so to speak. There seems to be activism around election periods only, right? So when there's a local government election and there's a national and provincial election, only then do you see people rally behind voting for a particular cause, for a particular issue. But where with everyday issues, nobody seems to be interested, whether it's lack of understanding of the fact that democracy is an all-year-round process, or it's just a matter of people saying, you know what, I'm not interested in it. It's apathy. One doesn't know. But there seems to be a lack of active citizenry, a lack of a passion that seems to. And that's the reason why we have the type of leadership that we are having, whether it's at local level or national level, because when people are unhappy, instead of actually challenging the issues that are making them unhappy, people then say, you know what, let me go on a protest or let me just keep my vote. And that is actually not even that doesn't help issues. It doesn't fix the situation. It actually makes it worse. Mm. So I think we have a responsibility, obviously, as civic society, to make sure that people start rallying against about these type of issues. We don't read up on parliamentary regulations and rules. None of us read up on that unless then it affects you directly. If you speak to 10 people and you say to them, do you know what is currently on the parliamentary portal in regard to the legislation that's being introduced or the legislation that's being changed? You'll probably find just one person who's able to respond to that. And that should be something that concerns us as a country in general, to say laws are being passed without our involvement, when the Constitution actually says that there should be a proper 2 months to 2 to 3 month process of public participation into these particular acts.
And as you said, Lulu, that it should be the public who are driving it. It speaks to leadership, doesn't it? Right. So in the same way, we look to political leadership as well about overall issues. This particular matter also requires leadership. So where in fact should it be coming from? I mean, for individual candidates in particular as well, with a huge interest in this particular fight, could certainly be louder. As media, we could be playing a better role as well about highlighting the importance of this sort of thing. But again, how to make the dots connect for people that the decisions made there and in this place, which essentially is the people's house, but here you have what 400 odd people there who fight and shout and we only care when there's a bit of drama, but what happens there in fact has a very, very immediate and a direct effect on what happens on a day-to-day basis.
Look, you're right when you say that it speaks to the leadership. We elect these leaders because we want them to represent our best interests. Whether these interests serve them as political leaders or not, the primary function may be to serve our best interest. But the reality is that one gets the sense that with politicians, ignorance is bliss.
Oh, yes.
What does not serve them, if you are ignorant about it, then they would also not advocate for it. Right. Now, you have a bill that says we want to elect Ndlovukazi Masilela to be our president without having to elect the Elephants Party. Which party is going to support that? Because it directly violates their own interests. It means that this is an active process of people saying we can actually do this democracy thing without you guys. We can actually unseat you in your comfortable seat as political parties and elect directly the people that we want to serve our direct interests because you are not doing a good job. So obviously no political party is going to want to support something like that or rally behind something like that. And if you look at when the judgment for this thing came in June last year, we are now in the middle of, or we're almost done actually with 2021. If I'm correct, if I'm not mistaken, that judgment said within 24 months, we should have, this whole process should have been finalized. We are already past 12 months of the 24 months.
Yes.
There's no drive, there's no push from members of parliament to actually make sure that this becomes law. Because the policymakers right now in parliament are members of political parties. They're not members of public society that are affected.
My guests this evening are Lulu Waitu, is a thought leader on elections, democracy and governance, as well as Lehlohonolo Letsele, who is the electoral systems researcher at My Vote Counts. At 11:30, we're having a conversation about the changes, in fact, to the Electoral Act. And in fact, what needs to happen? We're already a year in since that Concord ruling last year, in fact, essentially saying that the act was unconstitutional as it did not give expression to the rights of individual citizens to stand for elections. Will we be able to meet that deadline in a year's time? Yes, we're focusing on the LGE 2021, but of course there's this major matter as well, which is quite important for us to ensure goes well, and of course that you and I, as the electorate, as citizens, are in a better position, so that there's greater opportunity or greater options for us to choose from when we go to the polls. You can join the discussion on 0861 987 000, tweets as well at Seven Gambule and at Power FM 987.
Power Perspective with Seven Zile Gambule. Call Seven Zile on 0861 987 000. 987-000.
Still joined by my guest, Lehlohonolo Letsele, as well as Lulu White. We are talking about electoral reform broadly, but of course, in particular, that matter that has a deadline to it as well, but also a major requirement from you and I to participate and know that, in fact, we're still very much in this discussion, and it's not just left to a couple of people who happen to find themselves in Pali and, of course, in leadership in various political parties as well. This is very much our conversation, and we should, in fact, be driving it. Let's speak a bit about the rush of these elections, right? And how as an entity you're able to, or in fact, are working through tracking the sort of the sort of engagement. We know there's an opportunity this weekend for people to get registered, an opportunity for greater campaigning and so on to take place. How have you been able to track really how we're looking in terms of engagement, given just how unprecedented the time we're in is and the manner in which events played themselves out regarding these elections?
We've been working with some community-based organizations, since I was saying that many of them are actually taking the route of actually putting up an independent candidate instead of voting for a political party. So those, I think, are going to be the big changes that we're going to see in these elections. You know, I will recall last year some people actually took some municipalities to court. So there's quite a difference in terms of how people want to, you know, punish the incumbent local government. So I think this year we're going to see a lot of people rallying behind independent candidates, and actually social movement and community movement actually taking people's power. So that's basically some of the big changes that we're seeing. But there's also quite a lot of voter apathy, you know, to be honest. You know, I mean, and it's understandable, you know, in terms of the state of the economy, the state of the local crisis. People just, when you ask people about, are you going to register to vote? People are not interested. You ask, are you going to vote? They're not interested. So I think, you know, it's that thing of trying so much to make people understand that they need to vote, but at the same time, you don't want to educate people and tell them that, no, you need to vote, whereas they know that their vote is not going to make a difference. They're not oblivious, you know, to the current situation. So there's that. And I mean, also political parties as well, you know, not being innovative. I mean, they've been quiet for the most of the times, you know. I mean, they were hoping for postponement to an extent, some of them. So they've not really, you know, tapped into, you know, the digital space and trying to reach the voters. They're only waking up, you know, silently and trying to push political manifestos, you know. So those are going to actually count against them, you know, going into these local government elections. I mean, there's no time. I mean, we're sitting with 6 weeks. The IEC has not really conscientized people about voting. There's no adequate marketing. Only now that adverts are popping up on TV about registering to vote. I mean, these things require time. So, I mean, you know, it might be a very challenging election that we're going into.
It almost feels as though these elections were by the way. And to your point, Lehlohonolo, there was this expectation that, in fact, they would be postponed and they wouldn't, political parties didn't necessarily need to then do much. It's a very dangerous mindset to have that, I mean, even by extension for the electorate to then say, it's yet another thing. Because how do you get back that interest over time, where already, even prior to the pandemic, voter apathy was a problem?
I mean, you know, it's starting to show, you know, that relaxation, you know, in the beginning of the year, that hope that elections would be postponed and it's a by the way thing, because now you had the whole saga with the candidate list, you having issues with financing campaigns. So it's starting to show that there was not really much effort, you know, exerted into these local government elections. So people were hoping that they would have an extended mandate over people, which the Constitution actually said that cannot happen. So now it's this rush thing, you know, trying to get people to vote for them. And I don't see people actually buying this time.
I wanted to say that I think for me the biggest thing about this is that it shows a complete disconnection between political parties and the electorate. the fact that political parties have to wait for an election to talk to the electorate is a really big problem. Because if there was a constant engagement that continued to happen with members of the public between political parties and them, then the issue of contestation and campaigning for these local government elections would not be a challenge. Right? It's simply a continuation of an engagement that simply says, we have served you for so many years, and in our service, these are the things that we have done, and we have picked up what we have not succeeded in A, B, C, and D. And in these particular elections, we are then going to honor that which we were not able to do in our term. So the fact that political parties are finding themselves now grasping at straws, trying to find suitable ways to sort of reach out and campaign is a glaring thing that basically shows how there's no discord, there's no connection between the electorate and political parties. And that is a very big problem. And I think the requirement for the law to be amended for electoral reform is to actually address some of those issues where people are saying, we are tired of seeing political parties and they come to us and they massage our backs and they give us food parcels when it's election time. And then after elections, they've all forgotten about us. And then we see them again after 5 years. So what has happened now is basically a glaring example of the complete disconnect that exists between political parties and the electorate.
And with either party, right, or both? Both parties.
With all political parties, it's not even about the ANC, the DA, it's across the board.
Yeah, political parties as a collective, right? And the electorate as a collective, that yes. Essentially there've been shortcomings on yes. either side.
Yes, there's been shortcomings throughout. So it doesn't matter whether you're DA, whether you're EFF, whether it does not matter. The bottom line is that the fact that you are only right now, 4 weeks to an election, you are only now planning a message. Because you had been counting that the election is going to be postponed. And you're only now getting into grips to say, okay, oh, Gonzo, what am I going to promise these guys this time around? It shows that there's no connection. But if there was a connection between political parties and the people that vote for them, the discussion would be different. It would simply be, as per the previous. When you have a discussion that says, we've already gone through these things, you know what's missing, and this is what we are saying. We are going to be honoring 1, 2, 3 because we've done A, B, C, D, and E. But that is not happening. And that is why you are finding a lot of political parties right now, they are scrambling. You can't do blitzing because of COVID regulations. You can't do rallies because of COVID regulations. Mm-hmm. You can't do large gatherings because of COVID-19 regulations. So how are you going to campaign when you actually don't have a connection with these people? How are you going to go? How are you going to collect buses to take them to one place where you can convince them all at the same time? You've got no connection with these people. In fact, during this pandemic, people have been hungry. They are much more angrier than they were previously, in previous elections.
Yes.
So what do you have? What do you have as a political party? What are you offering? What is your value-added proposition this time around?
Do we have a sense, Lulu, where just if we stick to the issue around voter apathy, particularly around young people as well, do we have a sense of where we are as a country globally? Because it's a global problem, right? That for young democracies, participation would be. There'd be greater interest. The older you get, interest wanes, because then it just becomes, oh well, yes, there's that. We don't trust politicians. We're not bothered. Let's continue with life. And I imagine that as a country, we're there as well. But how do we compare to other parts of the world?
We compare to other parts of the world because first of all, we are a young democracy, and that is just our reality. But our struggles are different in Africa. Right, you would expect, and it's understandable. In South Africa, we have about 34% of the youth that are unemployed. You don't find it anywhere else in the world, not even on the continent. South Africa is the highest. Mm-hmm. South Africa is the one country that is currently looking at the highest criminal levels, especially crimes against women. You don't find that anywhere else in the world, and particularly also in the continent. Those are burning issues for South Africans. So we differ in that the struggles that we are facing as a country and as young people are completely different. In the UK, when they go to protest, they go to protest because they're saying that the government should pay for their education full time, and but it's not because they can't afford it. It's because that is something that they were, it's their right for them to access that. Mm-hmm. But ours, we're not only fighting for free education, we're fighting for food, we're fighting for employment, we're fighting for our bare existence. Right? But the biggest challenge now is that the youth have lost interest because political parties are not able to speak to them. Political parties talk at the young people of South Africa. They're not speaking to them. I don't know how many times we've talked about business interventions being done for entrepreneurs. But speak to 10 different entrepreneurs in different fields. Those initiatives have not gotten to them as young people. Mm. Now, then you sit in a country and you say, you know what? This government doesn't care about me. Why should I continue to vote for them? Mm. They are not tapping into what matters to me. How is 350 supposed to serve me? It's just a temporary measure. And also, you must remember, so it's not only the youth that is frustrated, it's also the taxpayer. Because the taxpayer is saying, I'm tired of carrying the country on my shoulders. The taxpayer is saying, why are we building a dependent state? Why are we building a state that depends on us for everything? When is the government creating employment? So everybody right now is at a point where they're saying they're tired of the government because the government is not doing enough. And the government is saying, but we are doing enough. You've got a private sector that doesn't seem to care. And that's just the reality. I mean, there was a study that was done a few weeks ago that showed that there's a complete disconnection between what the government does for the private sector and what the private sector is doing for the government. So the private sector is just gaining more from the government. There's no proper partnerships between the two. Because if the private sector is also playing its role, the issues that the young people of South Africa are facing with regard to unemployment, business interventions, those things would not be issues that the government would have to tackle on their own. So you've got a whole society, a whole group of people that are saying, we are tired, the government is not doing enough, and the government is saying, but we are overexhausted, we've done all that we can as a government. And the youth is saying, you don't care about us. So that's why there's these differences. And as much as, yes, you see them in other countries, I often look at and say, other countries are much more privileged. Of course, there are other countries that young people are not participating because they are being blocked from participating. I think if you remember 4 years ago when Nigeria went into an election, they had a campaign where young people were rallying behind each other for young people to start participating in politics, because until then, young people were being blocked from participating actively as whether as senator or local councillors or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you realize which the challenges that people have, young people have in their various countries differ. But in South Africa, our biggest difference is listlessness and people saying they don't care about me. Why should I care about them?
Just going back to the bits really that would need to be changed, that would need to be amended. I mean, there are all sorts of things around definitions, around provisions for registrations and all sorts of things things essentially that could seem and appear to be very, very complicated as well. And you may perhaps try and engage this process and think, oh dear, what does all of this mean? Actually, let me not bother. Can we in fact help people understand the most relevant aspects? All of it are relevant because they all need to be addressed, but the most relevant aspects particularly that people can look to and say, all right, there's an opportunity, there's something that I can actually look to participate in fighting for or in making sure that it's done in such a way that ultimately it has us in mind.
I mean, I think I'm starting to understand, you know, how we got here, you know, why are we pursuing electoral reform? What are the issues? If you look at the closed list PR system, you know, people think that it results in lack of accountability, you know, in a sense that, you know, political parties are the ones who determine who makes it to parliament. You know, it's their own little meeting there and they have a list of people, you know, based on their criteria from the party and who makes it to parliament. So essentially that person becomes your representative leader. So members become more loyal to that party.
than they are to the voters. So people are agitated that I vote, but I do not have a say in who represents me in parliament. So those are the issues with regards to the current system that we're using, that it results in lack of accountability. So what happens when you have lack of accountability? You have issues of corruption, you have issues of voter apathy, as Lulu was saying, that, you know, the electoral system results in a very, you know, a collapsing political system, you know, the erosion of separation of powers, the erosion of checks and balances. You remember how there was a whole issue with Mapisa going into parliament and people didn't have a say. That's when people actually started realizing that, you know what, it's possible for these things to happen without us being consulted as a people. So those are the kind of the issues that we have on the ground. So if we are going to look at issues of electoral reform, we're going to think about a completely new system, or maybe a hybrid system where you still have the PR system existing and also having a constituency-based system. So maybe you might want to explore, you know, the benefits of having a constituency-based system depending on what the recommendation is going to be. I mean, a constituency-based system provides greater the relationship between the leader and the constituency is better, because, I mean, you're from that place, you know the challenges, and people can easily hold you accountable. If there is no water, if there is no service delivery, somebody can just come in and say, hey, by the way, this is not working. Unlike having somebody from a different area coming to be a leader in your ward, you know, being pushed by a political party that they don't have vested interest in, you know, developing that community. Whenever you go to that person and ask, there's no service delivery, they just simply tell you, go to Lutili House, for instance. It's an ANC problem, not my problem. So think about the advantages of a constituency-based system, you know, this greater geographical representation. You know, most of the constituencies on the ground will have representation. So those are one of the things that you might want to think about, you know, going forward and having a different electoral system entirely. You know, having independent candidates in parliament would be bring fresh ideas, you know, fresh ideologies, let's debate, you know, not having people having to vote along party lines, you know, without any proper and robust engagement.
Do you think, just finally, and I'll pose the same question to Lulu, do you think it goes far enough, or there is an opportunity, in fact, to talk about values and standards and new social compacts or agreements, to the point Lulu was making about a disconnect between parties and the electorate, to almost redefine what that looks like? So going beyond once you've met what the law requires of you, or what the IC requires of you in order to participate, but in fact going a step further about what being a representative should mean, what being about people in the community you claim to represent should mean.
I think it's going to, you know, give, even political parties might find themselves, you know, changing and evolving, in a sense that there'll be greater competition. You know, there's independent candidates on the ground and there's political parties on the ground. If, as a political party, you don't provide service delivery as currently happens, I mean, you'll be voted out and somebody else will come in. So I think it will, you know, keep political parties on their toes. I think they will evolve, they'll change, and they'll try to be better. And also with them internally, they'll try to field, you know, better candidates, you know, and not just, just go see what you can do there and come back. I think they will try and, you know, put the best person forward, you know, and try and evolve it as an institution. I think it's going to be great for everybody. It's going to be great for independent candidates. It's going to be great for political parties. And most importantly, it's going to be great for voters on the ground.
I think we're being optimistic if you look at it like that. And I'll say this because, I mean, we already have an independent candidate system operating at local government, and that has not transformed. We've not seen it in council. I think that's why when we spoke, I gave an example earlier that in council, you find that these independent candidates still suffer because they can have a motion that is tabled in council, and if it's not supported by the majority of the House, then their voice is drowned out. And what has happened, if you've looked at the history, is that people will often start off as candidates, as independent candidates to get into the space. But as time goes on, the next time they contest as members of political parties that they contested against previously. And the reason for that is because as much as they are able, they carry the aspirations of their wards when they get into council. When they get there,
they don't have the space to express those aspirations. And that is a real tragedy. And then what becomes worse with the South African situation is that there's no referendum system where you can actually say, we are not happy with the service that so-and-so is giving to us, and we are therefore recalling him as the community. So when we go into taking the same mixed system and moving it to parliament, there's a bigger discussion that needs to happen to how do we have these people accounted for? Because the political party system, which is a proportional representation system, worked. And it worked because a political party, if it finds that against for whatever purpose and reason, it finds something against that particular person, they can recall that person and replace that person. How will that then translate at national and provincial level with an independent person, with an independent member of parliament? What measures, what barriers will the system have or the constituency have in place to ensure that where we are no longer happy with umuntu so, how do we recall this person and then replace him with somebody who carry our aspirations as a constituency to that particular seat? So there are already, so there's these limitations that also need to be taken into consideration, because already at local government, those things are not as effective as they should be. Those limitations exist even at local level. You find people will go there and the candidate is elected and becomes a councillor. He gets to council. Whatever visions he had for his particular constituency are not exactly properly expressed or even realized, because he is not part of a collective. Because when it comes to voting on the budget, when it comes to voting on the IDP, when it comes to delivery of services, those things are done as part of the collective. And if he does not form alliances with the right collective at council, his ward is out.
At national, though Lulu, is the bar perhaps not that much higher than what is the case at local, because you just have to amass that much more support in order for you to be able to get a seat there. So does that not in part perhaps tighten it a bit, if you will, in terms of accountability? Because again, the stakes are just that much higher, particularly for the individual.
Look, absolutely, the stakes are much, much higher, obviously, at the national level. And I think that's why I'm bringing the discussion up, to say how then do you hold them accountable? Because, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, you need about 35,000. A political party at national level needs about 35,000, if I'm not mistaken, to get a seat in parliament, meaning that if that has to be translated to an individual or to an independent, that's more or less what you are looking at, you know, in terms of people voting for in a particular constituency. Obviously, it will be broken down and it will be regulated and legislated on how it's going to be done. So the bar becomes much higher. The level of accountability becomes much higher. The manner in which you are able to get services or you've had your interests and aspirations met in parliament becomes a completely different ballgame. The challenge becomes how do we as a constituency, you know, those are the discussions that we need to be engaged in. And that's why I think it's important that as South Africans, we need to make it our business to make sure that we table those things in parliament. Mm. We need to be taking this discussion to parliament to say, the Constitutional Court has declared this. These are the suggestions we are making. This is the bill we are introducing. And this is how the constituency must be constituted. And this is how we want it to run. This is how we want to be able to hold this person accountable. This is how we want to be able to recall this person if they no longer meet our aspirations. So there should be a whole process that goes into it. So it's quite concerning, obviously, when we are not pushing it as much as we aren't, because there's a lot of discussions that need to happen around that. Once we talk to to communities breaking down into constituencies, you're looking at the demarcation board again. Demarcation as well. And how does that then also translate when we then also have a local government election that's taking place in a few more years to come? All of those discussions are discussions that we are already late in having.
Yeah, and we need to continue those conversations. We have to leave it there as we are out of time. And I want to just appreciate both of your time this evening to talk about these issues and as the LGE's approach and, of course, this deadline around the amendments to the Act approach as well. It will be very important, of course, to touch base again. So thank you very much, Lulu Lehlakgono. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Lehlakgono Letsheledi, electoral systems researcher at My Vote Counts and thought leader on elections, democracy and governance. Lulu White were my guests there. We must get involved. Key takeaway from there. You and I have to get involved. This isn't just a matter for those who find themselves in the National Assembly, in the in Parliament broadly, right, in COP, or even just leaders of the various political parties. A lot is at stake for you and I.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.